Succession number 10420, Rule 51.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 51. You were beginning to describe the an action with tanks, Colonel.
Well, it was my mobile patrol with two sections of carriers and a troop of Sherman tanks under Sergeant... The tanks were under Sergeant Hampson, and Bobby Pringle, my carrier officer, was in charge of the whole patrol. Now, the first encounter which this patrol was involved with were two small Italian tanks driving abreast down the road. They met them face to face. Now, the leading what happened would be that Bobby Pringle and his carrier would suddenly see these coming away down the road. They were in front, and they'd then tell the Sherman, look out. And in this case, the leading Sherman knocked out both with a shot apiece and also an ammunition truck. Unfortunately, this provided an efficient roadblock. And it was with difficulty, and only by the tanks pushing the burnt-out little tanks off the road, that the patrol got past. On rounding the corner a little bit further on, Bobby spotted three anti-tank guns, and these were knocked out also by the leading Sherman tank. Coming round the corner at a place called Chateau Rossa, I think it was, the column came on an Italian staff car, and containing no other than the GOC of the Napoli Division, who, with his staff, was soon put on a carrier and sent back to brigade. He was extremely annoyed at being told to sit on the top of the carrier and not a seat, not on a seat, and he was also even more annoyed at having his pearl-handled revolver taken away from him. It was rather like a little water pistol. Apparently, he was coming down the road to see where we had landed. Then, about 600 yards further on, a battery of field guns were on the right-hand side, off the road, and they were engaged by the tanks and knocked out. Only three prisoners were taken, the remainder of the crew was either being killed or escaping up into the hills, up into the hills adjoining the road. A group of R-88 tanks were observed in a field by the right-hand side of the road and were quickly engaged. The crews gave themselves up, but not before they had gained several hits on the R-3 tanks. And one Sherman had a bit knocked off its gun, and eventually the next thing they found, I've forgotten that, at Melilli, they found trucks containing ammunition, and these were set on fire, and 12 10-tonners were captured all intact. Soon after midday, this gallant patrol got to Palatola and gained contact with the Highland Division. And they arrived back at battalion headquarters round about tea time. I remember seeing General Gotti Portinari, the commander of the Napoli Division, being brought into battalion headquarters on the carrier of Sergeant Rain. I always remember it was Sergeant Rain, quite unconcerned as to who was sitting on the top of the carrier at the back. And there is a photograph of him, I know, in my scrap album in the Regimental Museum. Poor Sergeant Rain was ultimately killed. But it was an extraordinarily successful little outing for this small patrol. Well, they got back about tea time and drove up to my battalion headquarters, which was in a sort of bit of open ground, and the Sherman was there with Sergeant Hampson, and he jumped out of his tank, out of the turret of his tank, and caught his ring, which he had on his finger, on the edge of the turret. And he hung by one finger, the whole of his body hung there momentarily. And I think in the end the ring gave way, and he almost fainted. If he didn't faint, he may well have fainted. I know I had him put into my jeep, which was absolutely where I was standing, and I myself took him to the RAP, and I put him in, recommended him for a DCM, to his CO, and I think he got it. In fact, I'm almost sure he got it. But it was an example of perfect cooperation between six infantry grain carriers and a troop of Sherman tanks. Now, I kept a list, which I can read now, of what they actually captured. They captured two 88mm dual-purpose guns, two 75mm Italian field guns, two 28 Italian anti-tank guns, and two German Braun anti-tank guns, 11 Breeder Italian machine guns with tripods, and two without, and six Italian 3-inch mortars with ammunition, one Fiat Italian ammunition wagon, five Bianchi solo motorcycles, six Bianchi tricycles, 750mm Italian field guns, and 12 Lancia 10-ton diesel trucks, three Fiat 1500-weight trucks, and a large quantity of Italian ammunition, and 16 small tanks, and about 400 prisoners of war.
How did they get them all back?
What, the prisoners? Oh, they had to march the prisoners. We wouldn't bring them back. But it was the end of the Napoli Division. They ceased to exist. And the general himself, Portinari, went back to the prisoner of war camp. They were all, I suppose, eventually shipped to Egypt. But I really don't know. Of course, you've got to remember the Italians came out of the war very shortly afterwards. But that was the Battle of Solferino.
The morale of the battalion must have been quite something at this point.
Well, it was. They thought it splendid. Of course, there'd been casualties, but not all that many.
What were you doing for services at this day, for food and that? Was that coming through to you?
Yes, food was coming in. Of course, in an invasion like that, priority is always given to maintaining the personnel with food, and water would be available. Of course, Sicily was fairly full of water supplies, wells and that sort of thing.
What was the greatest difficulty, the terrain itself?
I think the greatest difficulty was movement, having to do this sort of shuttle service. But it was what the brigadier wanted. I'm quite convinced that had the brigadier said, right, you wait there till we call you forward. We could have gone forward in one fell swoop, but instead we did this sort of movement, and then we found we couldn't go any further, had to sit by the roadside, then moved on a little bit further, sit by the roadside. Well, it's an awful tiring procedure, but if we'd stayed behind and he'd said, right, 6 DLI, come up now, well, it would have been, we'd have been much quicker, really, in the end.
Were you following other units through?
Oh, yes, you see, in this case, we'd been following the 8th DLI, and they in front had the 5th KOILI, all moving northward, pushing northward. Yes, I think it was a foolish method of moving forward. Anyhow, that night we spent a very quiet night without any interference at all. We dealt with any Italians that might have interfered with us, and of course we'd stopped the counterattack which the Italians had threatened and about which we'd been warned. And I was warned too the next day that we should be ready to move at about half an hour, at 7:30, I was told, in the morning, at half hour's notice. Well, on the 15th, the 69th Brigade were in front, and they had been involved in some very heavy fighting against the Germans, and they were the forward brigade in Lentini and Carlentini. They'd been it was pretty hilly country now we were in entering, and behind them were the 9th DLI, and then the 8th DLI, and then us, moving northwards in that order, going through, as I say, the hilly country with olive and fruit trees all over. And if the brigadier had a maddening habit of calling the COs forward, and then when you went there, he wasn't there. He'd gone off somewhere else. And he did it over and over again. And by now, on the 15th of July, we were on the straight stretch of road dropping into Carlentini. We'd been moving northwards, and Lentini and Carlentini, and where the 69th Brigade had a rather unpleasant battle. On the straight road too were 7 carriers of the Cheshire Regiment, all completely burnt out, and having been bombed, I think, from the air, and there were a lot of casualties, and the sappers were filling in the craters in the road as we came up and burying the dead, or the remains of the bodies. Now, we eventually found the brigadier, that's to say we, the 3 COs, found the brigadier, who told us that the British paratroops, which had been dropped on the far side of Primosole Bridge, had not been able to hold on account of lack of ammunition. Where we were, we could see down below us the river Gornalunga or Simeto, whatever it was called, and the famous Primosole Bridge, and beyond that, the plain of Catania, and beyond that, rising right up high above all the surrounding country, Mount Etna, with little white plume of smoke which always came out of the top the whole time, day in, day out. Now, we found the brigadier who told us this information, and he said that the 9th Battalion, commanded by Andrew Clark, of course, was to march as fast as they could to cross the bridge over the river and make a bridgehead. Now, Andrew said, I heard him say, now, of course we'll do it, sir, but my men are desperately tired, and I'm sure they were. We have just marched 25 miles and then been told to attack across and make a bridgehead. He said he would do his best. And we were told to move up into his place to make a firm base. And after dark, there was a good moon, and the battalion moved up into the positions where Andrew Clark had previously been. From D Company's positions, we could see fires blazing in Catania, in the city of Catania, and also on the landing grounds in the Catania plain, this side of the city. Well, everybody knows it, the history. The outcome was 9th DLI failed. They really were absolutely whacked. Some of them were drowned in the river, and they failed to get across.
There were Germans you were meeting now, were they?
Now, well, I can describe what the land was like round Primacelli Bridge. Primacelli Bridge, there are many photographs have been taken of it, was a high-standing bridge above the river, girder bridge, and beyond the bridge was an oblong, on the left-hand side, was an oblong vineyard. No depth at all, about 200 or 300 yards, and that's about all. And it stretched perhaps, I suppose, quarter of a mile upstream, and the vines were very thick. Immediately as you climbed out of the river, there was a lot of scrub before you got into the vines themselves, a certain amount of scrub. And beyond the vineyard was a sunk lane, and it was given subsequently the name of Stink Alley. Now, between the lane and the vineyard was a hedge of extremely thick prickly pears. Similar conditions applied on the other side of the road that crossed the bridge. Now, at the corner, just as you crossed the bridge, on the left-hand side, was the remains of a farmhouse. And the road, as soon as it crossed the bridge, was dead straight right across the plain of the Catania, and it had an avenue of trees on either side of them. There was no trees at all on the plain, because there were the landing grounds of the Catania aerodrome, and this road went absolutely dead straight to the outskirts of Catania. To reach the bridge, you had to come down from the high ground, and the road came rather twisty round down the hill until there was a very steep S-bend to get onto the bridge itself. And on the left-hand side was a quarry, or an old quarry, but the bend was, S-bend was very severe, and there were, when we went down past it, 7 dead mules, and it got the name of Dead Horse Corner. And in the quarry, you got a certain amount of shelter, but it was in that quarry, after the whole of the battle was over, that a solitary shell dropped and killed Andrew Clark and his second-in-command. But then that was after the Battle of Over was over, and when they were in reserve, just fortuitously, it dropped right in the middle of the quarry. Anyhow, we go back to the attack by the 9th Battalion. They suffered very heavy casualties, and as I say, some of them were drowned in the river. The depth of the river, when we went across was it came up to my waist, and I pushed up as I waded across, my field glasses up further up onto my chest and my revolver. So what it was like for a small man, you can well imagine. It must have been well up to his chest. And I can remember seeing some of the Cheshire regiment going across after they'd supported us, and they carried their machine guns above their heads. So you can see how deep the river was where we actually crossed.
How wide was it to go?
Oh, well, it was 30, 40 yards, something like that. Well, that was that night. Now, on the 16th, when it was hardly light, the next day, the 8th Battalion went across, and they did make a very, very small bridgehead. And it was impossible for them to move because they were met by intense rifle machine gun fire from the Stink Alley and from further up the vineyard. And Bob Lidwell was the CO, and it was impossible for him to do anything. And of course it was impossible for us to do anything. They got they were pinned down. And on the morning of the 16th, very, very early, I was called to meet the brigadier at the bridge. But of course, when I went there, he wasn't there. It was manning habit. So back I went to brigade, and I was immediately told he'd gone forward again. I went to the bridge, and there I met at the bridge on the flat approach at Dead Horse Corner. I met a chap called Nick. I can't remember his surname. He was always known as Buster. And Buster was a sapper officer of the 505 Field Company of the Royal Engineers. And he'd got a bullet hole through both soft parts of his leg. But he seemed to be quite cheerful. And he shouted to me, "For God's sake, don't go any further." He was with a party of sappers. What they were doing down there, I really don't know. But I asked him where the brigadier was, and he said he'd gone back. It was hardly light, mind you. I went back to brigade, and there was no brigadier there, and he'd gone forward to the bridge again. And all the time there was sniping going on, even at us, or even at the approach to the bridge, and also mortar fire. And when I got there, I found Buster and the brigadier talking under an embankment on the approach, just on the approach to the bridge. And there were also three tanks, I think, trying to cross the bridge to get to the other side. But they couldn't, because on the straight road on the far side were two 88mm guns, and they were firing straight down onto the bridge. I remember them after the battle was over, we found them. There they were. They'd been smashed by our artillery. They were stopping everything coming onto the bridge. Mind the British parachutists who'd failed to hang on had been successful in taking out the detonators on the charges that the Germans had placed on the bridge to blow it up. So there was a time when nobody can get onto the bridge to put the detonators back. The Germans couldn't get on, neither could we to take the British to take the charges off. And there was an appalling scene of havoc, really, at that approach to the bridge. There was vehicles upside down, and these three tanks were in flames, and there were pillboxes smashed, and there was a large glider on its side just by the road as you went onto the bridge. It was absolutely chaos. Then the brigadier said to me, well, now, your battalion must do an attack. And he told me that it was only a few snipers, he thought, holding up the advance. The morning's poor scene of the career happened to the approach to the bridge. So the side was up and down. These three tanks were in flames, and the billboard of a smashed, and there was a large glider on its just by the side of the road. Went as you the bridge onto the bridge, absolutely chaos. Said to me, "Your battalion must orbit attack, do an attack." And he told me it was only me that sniped me a few thought as he started up holding the advance. There was an appalling scene of havoc that approach to the bridge. There was vehicles upside down, and these three tanks were in flames, and there were pillboxes smashed, and there was a large glider on its side just by the road as you went onto the bridge. It was absolutely chaos. Then the brigadier said to me, well, now, your battalion must do an attack. And he told me that it was only a few snipers, he thought, holding up the advance. The morning's poor scene of the career happened to the approach to the bridge. So the side was up and down. These three tanks were in flames, and the billboard of a smashed, and there was a large glider on its just by the side of the road. Went as you the bridge onto the bridge, absolutely chaos.